This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
When the 1995 movie Clueless came out, moviegoers everywhere, myself included, coveted Cher Horowitz's virtual fitting room where she could try on clothing from a closet on a little avatar of herself. Like, really cool, right? Well, two decades later, we are closer than ever before to having our very own virtual dressing room in the form of Blink, with a Q, an app aiming to combine augmented reality fitting rooms, online luxury brand shopping, and clothing rental subscriptions into this one-stop luxury fashion shop. And the man behind this dream app for fashionistas is none other than serial entrepreneur Bob Chua, who is with me in studio today. So thanks very much for coming in and speaking to me about
this.
All right, so, I mean, let's kind of introduce people to you and give people some context, because you're the founder of Pulse Group.
Correct.
That's a company dedicated to market research. Mm-hmm. And you've also had experience with a lot of tech companies, mainly kind of to do with robotics. So there's Dragonfly Robotics and Dematic as well, right? So this seems a bit off-brand. Like, what about the luxury fashion market in Southeast Asia intrigued you enough to create this app?
Sure. So, look, I mean, it's nice to be back in the studio probably 10 years later talking about another venture. I mean, I started probably the same time that BFM did, and, you know, I did a few interviews here. So it's nice to see you guys have grown so successfully as well. But I think, you know, to your point, you know, I started with Pulse in the analytics space. Then I moved on into both investing as well as driving a few initiatives, including automation, robotics, etc. You know, to be honest, I think having a background in analytics and the automation in the logistics space sort of spurred me to start something like what Blink is today. I mean, it probably took me a few years after my last exit to have all the stars align and see what's happening in the marketplace, especially in the region that we're in. I mean, Southeast Asia right now is extremely hot. I think if you take the trifectas of the young population, a very a big market, you know, we're talking about 650 million people or so, but a rising affluence and a big passion for luxury, you know, to me, it's pretty obvious that, you know, e-commerce is going to be the next big thing here, and it's already happening, and we're seeing quite a big battle from the big boys as well as upcoming players like ourselves, all trying to get into the last frontier. So I guess to go back full circle, you know, looking at the next venture, you know, I needed sort of a few stars to align, and also for me to contribute something that I understand in. So the analytics space and understanding consumer behavior sort of gave me a big push in this direction that Southeast Asia is where we should be investing in. I think the AR and automation space gave me the idea of, you know, this is how fulfillment and e-commerce is happening in the more developed worlds. And I think there's a big opportunity here to fulfill product to the rest of Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And luxury, because it's just a niche. I mean, it's something that everyone in Asia is hungry for, and no one's doing it right now. So I think putting all of those things, as well as my background in place, is pretty obvious that, you know, Blink is a result of that.
Right. But, you know, do you not worry about maybe shutting out a potential demographic because you're focusing on luxury fashion at all?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, I think when you get into a business, you have to look for a specific consumer segment or psychographic space. It's not necessarily that we're shutting them out, but we're finding a space that is a niche for us. I mean, we have e-commerce players throughout the region that are operating in, say, the mass fashion space. You have some operators working in the premium space, but there's no one as yet operating at the scale that we want to operate in the luxury fashion space. So we know we're targeting, you know, probably the top 1-5%. But, you know, that's our choice in terms of going up the value chain and targeting specific product for specific people and specific basket size and hence specific margin. So I think for us, it's both a commercial as well as a conscious decision that's the niche that we want to play in.
Right. And so Blink, you know, let's kind of focus on the app and its features, because it's basically intended to address many, if not all, of the major pain points associated with shopping for clothes, right? So there's avoiding the hassle of fitting rooms, cheaper clothes, freeing up storage space, even finding the best deals.
Yep.
How does it address all these pain points?
Look, it addresses multiple points, as you pointed out. I mean, the biggest problem for consumers today, especially in the luxury fashion e-commerce space, is the high level of returns, right? To brands, that's a big problem, a huge cost. I mean, we're talking about anywhere from 25% on a low day to 70% on a high, like Singles Day or Chinese New Year, et cetera. So, and you've got these other mega trends now of people just ordering stuff and wearing it, putting it on Instagram and returning it within 45 days for free, which is also a big problem for brands and retailers, et cetera. So I think by introducing augmented reality onto our platform, we're hoping to reduce returns because people can actually visualize how a product's going to look on them, and especially when it's in the more expensive, higher ticket item space, I think people would like to see how it looks like on them. I think the ability to then try different colors and have all the multiple choices at their fingertips from their mobile, and the convenience factor is a huge factor. So I think that there's multiple pain points that we're trying to solve. And right now, yes, you can get luxury online. You can order through various platforms, various marketplaces, but you'll have to wait 2 weeks for a product to arrive. You'll have to pay $100 for shipping costs, and the ability to return is almost zero.
Right.
Have you tried ordering something from the US or Europe? Forget it. If it comes in a wrong size or something that doesn't really fit you, you're stuck with it. So these are the multiple pain points that we're addressing. And we want to fulfill from this part of the world. So you'll have real-time delivery and a whole multitude of options.
Right. On that note, right, because you're trying to do so much, why, combine all of these services into one app? Why not just focus on one aspect first and then expand from there?
Yeah, sure. I think, look, the main e-commerce mode is obviously see now, buy now. You see something online, you buy it, right? I mean, it's as easy as that. We've added multiple more layers on that, which is, for example, augmented reality, whereby we get to have a virtual changing room. Later on, we're going to introduce other in-store experiences, etc. But even just the virtual changing room is quite a big investment for us, and it's a big differentiator for us. So differentiating is one thing. Two, we're giving different and richer options to our users to be more immersive in the retail experience. And the other options that we're providing to people, for example, rental, a marketplace for pre-loved, flash sales, curated, it's because that's how people want to consume fashion today. It's not necessarily because we want to do it for the sake of it, but if we're looking at models in the US and in Europe, things like Rent the Runaway, things like Stitch Fix, things like The RealReal, very billion-dollar businesses now, because that's how people like to shop. They don't necessarily want to own everything. And some people who aren't good in terms of designing fashion for themselves, they'd like someone to design it for them and curate it for them. So we're actually bringing options to consumers in Southeast Asia as opposed to trying to do too much. I think we think that that's what people want. Mm. And based on our trials and our panels of tests so far, we're getting a lot of analytics that suggest this is how people are consuming fashion today.
Got you. And, let's go back to that that point that you make about doing all this research, because the app hasn't launched yet. You founded the company in, I believe, late 2018.
Yeah.
And the app is slated to launch in the second quarter of 2019.
Yeah.
So, what was the decision behind that, and what have you been doing in that time for, the research and development process?
Look, I guess the question is, what haven't we been doing? Because, as with any startup, you're running in so many different directions every day and going through so many different emotions and the list just gets longer and longer. So since we launched, since we started the organization, obviously we've done a lot of hiring. We've hired people from development. We've got about, close to 20 people just purely doing development right now. And the platform, as you say, is probably the most important thing for us to get launched. We're aiming for next month in May. We've got people signing up brands to the catalog. We have people focusing on the logistics, so ensuring that our fulfillment and customer experience in terms of buying product and getting it to you is addressed. We've been raising funds. I think we raised a seed round recently of about $2 million. We're continuing that process. So we've got multiple more rounds that we're doing right now. So look, we've been busy, but I think my priority and I'm putting a lot of pressure on my guys really to launch the platform, get it out there, get people using it, And then we consider that day one. We're not even there yet, but we'll get there pretty soon.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was actually something I was going to mention, was that a seed round of funding. Mm-hmm. With the $2 million US dollars. And you've mentioned to Deal Street Asia that the money is intended for essentially accelerating hires and platform developments as well, right? So is that specifically just to get the app off the ground? Is that the main point?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, $2 million US or in ringgit terms, 8 million ringgit doesn't really take you that far today. I mean, in terms of a kind of scale and degree that we want to bring this to. So, the momentum of fundraising for us needs to increase. It's a pretty capital intensive game because we're not just building technology, we're also building the marketplace in the middle. We're talking about a region that's 650 million people or so, 14 different markets. We're talking about back-end logistics. So we're talking about warehousing. We're talking about automated logistics, robotics. So there's sort of three pillars of our business, and hence the capital intensiveness is pretty high. But we're looking at different comparables and the sort of mode that they raise money in, and it's already in the $200-300 million range. We've got a long way to go,
right.
But the tenure of how long that is getting shorter and shorter. So our fundraising process, we've already thought about Series B. We're talking to people on that level, but we've got a few rounds to go yet.
Right. And you've talked a little bit about why you chose specifically luxury fashion, because you believe that that's a niche market for you to go into.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that dominant luxury fashion e-commerce players are casting their eyes on China. Why Southeast Asia?
Well, I think that's exactly the point. I mean, for everyone right now, from Farfetch to ASOS to Net-a-Porter to Rent the Runaway, Moda Operandi, I mean, all of them are looking at China. And I would too, because it's one of the biggest luxury markets in the world. If you look at the personal luxury market right now, or last year rather, it was about $300 billion. Next year, it's going to be about $500 billion. And 44% of that is in China alone. Right, so they'll be silly not to, to basically ignore China. Problem is, every man and his dog is in China right now, and you've got the big dominant Chinese players of Tencent, Alibaba's, JD's, taking a big share of that pie. Why would I not look at China? That's exactly why. Why would I want to go into a crowded space when this is my playground? And Southeast Asia has always been the space that I've operated in and found a good niche in, and it's not an easy place to do business. So I think the barriers of entry in this part of the region is pretty high. Unless you're an entrepreneur who knows the space, who speaks the language, has the connections, understands the business nuances, I think it's a very hard place to conduct business. So I think we've got all of those ingredients to make it work in this part of the world. That's sort of why we chose this region. And Southeast Asia is not small. It's it's going to be a $7 trillion economy in the next few years. We've got the highest middle class population moving into this part of the world by 2030. So, I think we've got all the right ingredients to make it work. We just need to make it happen now.
Right. And, let's talk revenue for a second because, with the app itself, it feels like it's a kind of middle way between the consumer and the warehouse and the luxury brand,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So where is that revenue coming from? Is the app going to be free when it's launched or how are you working that out?
I think the mobile is just a means of how we reach our consumers, right? We don't look at this business as an app. I mean, it's a real ecosystem. If you look at, say, Amazon, Alibaba, it's not an app. They're e-commerce platforms. Where they make the money from is really logistics, it's CRM, it's about fulfillment, the 3PL. So I think in terms of monetization, obviously when we sell a product, we get a certain revenue and a revenue cut from consumers, whether it's rental, whether it's pre-loved or what have you. So that's a B2C monetization model, pretty straightforward. Now from the back end, brands and merchants who want to sign up and sell their product on our platform effectively pay for the sorting, the sortation, the picking, the storage, return handling, the payment gateways, etc. So they would give us a fee cut similar to most marketplaces. We're looking at in the region of 20 to 30% if we look at, say, publicly traded e-commerce platforms, the big guys, and even the regional guys out here, we're probably talking about anywhere from 15 to 20% cut from merchants. So that's the B2B model in terms of monetization.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break for some messages and some ads. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about how augmented reality is going to change the way we shop. More from Blink on Open for Business after this, BFM 89.9.
Bagi Free Minum.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
This is Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong, and serial entrepreneur Bob Chua is with me today. We're discussing his latest venture unrelated to robotics. It is a one-stop fashion app called Blink with a Q. Now, Blink addresses a lot of the kind of pain points that consumers face in the fashion industry, where you have augmented reality dressing rooms, essentially. You can rent clothes for cheaper, and you can even find the best deals as well. And Blink does all this with the help of augmented reality. This is my question in that there are already apps that use augmented reality, including fashion apps, although they don't, you know, they're not players in the luxury fashion market, but Gap, for example, has an augmented reality app called Dressing Room, and it uses an avatar to put clothes on, essentially. But for Blink, you're using a photo. What's the advantage of that?
Well, we want to make it as real as possible. I mean, there's a few players that use avatars. It's probably easier technologically. I think for us, when you use an avatar, it's very hard to get accurate sizing. It's very hard to get accurate coloring, etc. So we want to make it as real as possible. So effectively, you take a picture of yourself, or your friend takes a picture of you. So we get signed up two people every time that we do a recruit. But we want to make it as realistic as we can. So you take a photo of your friend or yourself, and you know, we can match color tones, we can do your actual sizing. So we've got all sorts of algorithms to measure that. And you know, I think that's more realistic user experience in our view.
Right. And obviously the beta is currently on Google Play, and you intend on entering Apple App Store as well.
Yes.
Are you concerned at all about, you know, the accuracy of the AR with different devices having different camera qualities?
Yeah, look, I think as technology improves, I mean, you know, talking about technology and quality, Apple are going to launch an AR-enabled phone this summer. And most phones, even Android phones, are going to have 8 cameras as opposed to 4 that we have today. And the difference between 8 versus 4 is quite big, because the extra 4 cameras that you're going to see on the new iOS and Android devices provide depth. So when you have depth and you have 2D, you have 3D. So when you have 3D, AR becomes a whole different ball game, right? So for us, we're sort of at the right place as well, in the right juncture, where the technology is meeting both the platform as well as device. And you know, I think by the time we launch and by the time people start using it, they'll get a very rich AR experience. So you know, we're looking forward to the next few months.
Awesome. And you know, I believe in a previous interview on a different platform, you mentioned that you're aiming to monetize Blink by white labeling the virtual changing room AR features to other e-commerce sites as well. So in that case, when that point comes, what would then set Blink apart that would entice consumers to keep using the app?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's multiple modes how we monetize, as we mentioned, the B2C side and the platform and the backend logistics. But, you know, I think we also realize some clients may want to use our technology on their platform. So, you know, as you said, Gap are using AR to a certain extent right now. We're seeing IKEA launch it with their furnishing.
Mm-hmm. Sephora as well?
Yes, yeah, Sephora using it for cosmetics and makeup. And they're all using it in different ways, right? So not all of these guys have the ability to extend technology into their mobile platforms and investments. And hence, we've developed it. We can white label it for certain clients. We can white label the logistics part of it if they just purely want to store and have us handle fulfillment in Southeast Asia, or use our platform to sell on our platform for reaching the 650 million people, etc. So there's really different modes. We would obviously prefer that we provide the entire platform end-to-end, and you know, they enjoy the marketing, the reach, the logistics, etc. But if they want to use a piece or one piece or another, it's fine as well. I mean, we see this opportunity in various modes.
Right. So it's not necessarily that this particular kind of, I guess, software or the technology will specifically be for other luxury fashion competitors. It's just the AR that you're kind of
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And, you know, let's talk about the luxury aspect of the whole thing, because you have a pre-loved marketplace feature, well, planning to anyways.
Yes.
So, you know, because they're luxury brands, how do you verify the authenticity of the items on the marketplace to ensure that they're legitimate?
That's a great question. I mean, that's probably the biggest problem with pre-loved right now, the authenticity of products, especially in this part of the world where there's a lot of fake products. So there's multiple modes that we're exploring. One is blockchain, for example, to trace the source of a product. Two is getting specific luxury authenticators. And Japan, for example, trains a lot of people to authenticate anything from leatherware, handbags, to watches, to clothing. So we're exploring various modes, and you know, we're going to use some industry standard stuff, but we're also innovating with some more leading edge stuff. So, but as you said, I think the authentication is going to be the most important thing, because there's no way that we can carry or support any non-authentic brand.
Right. And what brands have you currently started to work with that will be in your warehouse? And also, what was that like? What were the challenges of that?
Yeah, so, you know, whenever you start, and you know, I think Farfetch, Rent the Runaway, they all face the same thing. When you're starting, you sort of have to beg the brands to get onto your platform, believe it or not. you know, and, you know, we had to go and beg and scream and get all the good brands. And we want to get some of the marquee brands on. So we've got the usual you know, Italian and French brands that you'd see in a big luxury mall. We've got a whole bunch of them as we speak, and they'll be available in the catalog next month. But we're also launching a platform to help sort of bespoke and up-and-coming Southeast Asian brands as well reach the global marketplace, because I think that's a responsibility that, you know, we would like to promote. And, you know, I think we're going to see a lot more niche brands come up through the Blink platform. I mean, that's really our aspiration. So hopefully using our platform that have reach, that have the technology, and that have the fulfillment capabilities to play with the big boys.
Right.
So we're going to see a lot of new brands coming to the fray.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because another part of Blink's, you know, appeal is that influencers can kind of curate a virtual look on the app to share on social media before they
Absolutely.
Buy, rent, yep. you know, receive those products,
sure.
right? So to what extent are you kind of playing towards that particular demographic of the social media influencer? And like, do you think that's going to have an impact on the trends in the luxury fashion industry as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the millennials are sort of driving innovation in terms of how they shop and how technology providers like us interact with them, whether it's in-app shopping through Instagram, whether it's curation, whether it's you know, influencing others. And you know, we have to adapt to that. And retail has been horrible at innovation, to be honest. And that's an opportunity for companies like Blink to reinvent how consumers engage with brands. And you've got now a lot of direct-to-consumer brands. You've got curated brands. But I think the Blink platform sort of bridges that gap. So I think the millennials and the influencer is going to be very important in terms of how we drive the Blink platform as well as message. We're definitely designing towards their needs and wants. So, you know, hopefully we'll have a product that a lot of people will really be quite familiar with. Now, I think just to give you a specific example, we're introducing a buy now, pay later option. Okay, so, you know, one of your previous questions was, are we targeting purely the 1%. Mm. And I don't want to be snobbish about it, but you know, I think I'd like to extend that 1% for my own commercial purposes to say the top 5%, the top 8%.
Right.
And how do we do that? So the buy now, pay later option is one of them, whereby, you know, a user can actually buy, say, a $10,000 handbag, but split the payment over 4 months interest-free and not have any extra cost to it. So instead of just getting a consumer that can afford the $10,000 band, we now have consumers in the space that they can afford $2,500 over
right.
4 months. So by that virtue of that, we're actually increasing our demographic segment to probably the top 10%.
Right. So essentially, they would be paying in installments, right?
Effectively, yes.
Right.
So, and I think the young folks love that. And they like to defray that cost, and they can then afford more luxury stuff. I think rental is interesting as well, because not everyone wants to own clothing now. I think if we look at most people's wardrobe, they use about anywhere from 12 to 15% of a wardrobe. And the rest of that, they'll either throw or give away or what
right.
have you. So, you know, we're giving the option of that pre-loved marketplace where they can sell it onto a marketplace if it's luxury. Or they have a small wardrobe and rent stuff as and when they want it. And we're starting to understand a lot of analytics from our test panel that, you know, people, especially younger females, would like to own outright, say, a little black dress, white blouse, black blouses, a certain trousers, etc. But the rest of them, when it comes to anything more colorful, anything more flamboyant, they prefer to rent it because they can, after a week, give it back or get something new.
Right.
And we're doing things like visual search and stuff. So a whole bunch of innovative technology that we're embedding into the platform that is sort of how people shop now, which is quite interesting.
And I guess also for luxury items specifically as well, generally speaking, if a consumer is going to you know, invest in that. It's for like some sort of special occasion or something where they don't necessarily want to have that in their wardrobe 24/7.
Absolutely.
Right. So that's interesting that you're including that rental subscription model. So exactly how does that work? Are there tiers to that? Like how
that's
are you
right.
pricing that?
Yeah. You know? So I mean, you know, if you're a subscriber of Netflix, it works in a very similar way, right? So you pay say 250 ringgit or 250 Singapore dollars or what have you, and different tier pricing whereby for that subscription model, you get to use as many different outfits per week, and hence that works for you. For the Stitch Fix model, the subscription model, you know, we send two or three different curated products to you, boxes of outfits, and you choose which one you want and send the rest back.
Mm.
So there's different methods, and you know, this is proving to be very successful everywhere else, and I think it'll be a big hit in this part of the world.
All right, and I guess finally, really, Blink will be available sometime in the second quarter of 2019. You've mentioned May as a
yes.
potential thing. Any idea of a date potentially for launch?
Yeah, look, we're aiming for mid-May, and it'll be the platform will be available obviously on the web, but more relevantly on iOS and Android. So. Yeah, watch this space, and we look forward to our users using it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming and speaking to me today all about Blink with a Q. I've been speaking to Bob Chua all about Blink. And like Bob said, Blink will be available on Google Play and the App Store sometime, hopefully in mid-May. So do keep an eye out for that because I know I will be. I'm Christine Wong, and this is Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.